Hello, welcome to the F1 show. We're here to discuss the Belgian Grand Prix from Spa, which was kind of good and kind of bad in places.
Painful.
Highs and lows. Lots going on. Joining me to carve through it, we've got a great panel. First of all, top left, Tony Blunt. How you doing, mate?
Hello, I'm doing fine, thanks. And you?
Yeah, great. No worries. Did you enjoy the race?
Yeah, I thought it was a good one again.
Right. Oh, positive. Next to Tony, we've got Sarah. How you doing, girl?
I'm very well, thank you.
And last but by no means least, making his welcome return from ensuring that the games were safe and wonderful and helpful and no one died in a car accident.
Hmm.
Chris Van Woods.
Two of those three, anyway.
Did you cause any?
I didn't, no.
Didn't have an accident, saw thousands in the rearview mirror.
An angry middle-aged lady on a bicycle gave me the finger. That was about him.
That's modus operandi for cyclists. London cyclists.
She wasn't wearing a helmet, by the way.
Generally, I would say. I haven't seen hardly any London cyclists obey traffic instructions. Red lights, doesn't care. Not my favourite. Okay. I got some bad tweets.
No, we prefer four wheels.
Right. The Belgian Grand Prix. It was a hell of a deal. Different with the weather, though, I think.
Awful. Especially on Friday, yeah.
Yeah, I mean that was proper rain. That was straight down, wasn't really it? Heavy. Holy hell, we're wet rain. I thought it was quite an interesting point that I think it was Widmarsh was saying that effectively Friday was pointless. They got nothing about setup. They knew nothing about the track, and it became almost a bit of a lottery when it went into qualifying, which is why the qualifying was kind of so over the place. Vettel missed the top 10 shuffle, didn't he? You know, there's a bit of me thinking, why bother having a practice? Why not just wait till the rain stops? Why not have a do it on a Thursday so that you've then got the Friday if one's washed out? You know, does it always have to be on that Friday?
I would imagine that with the issues with the limit on the number of engines and gearboxes and stuff that they've got these days, I think the F1 teams probably wouldn't be very happy about that idea.
What's giving them an option?
Unless they said, well, we'll do Thursday, unless it rains on Thursday, in which case we'll do Friday.
Yeah, I mean, if you turn up and the forecast is it's probably going to piss down on Friday, have the option of the Thursday. I know there's TV deals and that kind of stuff, which is a big factor, but at least get some people out on the track and get them to learn something. Because, I mean, I felt Spa really was a little bit of a lottery as well, though.
Yeah, it spiced it up a bit, didn't it?
Moving first practice to a Thursday would have a massive knock-on effect logistically, because at the moment, when you have flyaways, they have to pack up and then go to wherever they go, fly out any new parts that are needed, and they'd have one less day to do that. So they would almost have to have two teams leapfrogging over each other.
Yeah, because they're already going pretty much straight from one track to another for the next week at some places anyway, aren't they?
I think this
will be a good example this week. It's going from Spa to Monza.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was towards the end of last season. I think, forgive me if I'm wrong, but I think it was Martin Whitmarsh who actually said that with the number of races they're doing now, that they're on the edge of being able to do it with one team anyway. So if Bernie decides he wants to start expanding it anymore, then we may start into a situation where we get that sort of thing happening anyway.
I mean, the garage setups that they've got, I mean, they are broken down within 2 hours of finishing the Grand Prix. Everything's in a flight case with a lid on it as much as possible. Everything folds out and folds away again. The generators are linked up. There's frames that come in that have already got all the cabling applied to them. You know, they can actually put the thing up in less than a day. And I think that you would probably find that at the track, you've got most teams could quite happily go out and have a play on a Thursday if it was available to them. I think they'd positively take that as well.
Yeah, I suppose if you gave them the option, it might be something that they would take.
Yeah, because it's when they do the track walks at the moment, isn't it? It's like, you know, they do... You know, if anything's changed with the track, or, you know, they just do the walk around
Wednesday
it.
And that kind of area. Yeah.
There's such an emphasis on media and press now, though. They have drivers at engagements for much of the week, as I understand it, before they actually get in the car. Very little times actually spent in the car. So given that most of the money seems to come from this commercial stuff now, would that not negatively impact?
Yeah,
or would they just go, sorry, we can't come to your dinner. We got to do some motor racing.
Yeah, no, the sponsorship events is a big factor, isn't it? Yeah.
Especially for McLaren. And in fact, Jensen's been tweeting today about the driver's briefings, which obviously tend to happen on a Thursday.
Right. Good point in the chat room from Sachs. He's saying, would the track be too green without support events on the other days, which help them to run the track in, ready to limit the abuse on the tyres and so on for the F1 boys?
That's a point. Yeah, yeah. I noticed after the F1 practice when it threw it down with rain, GP2 went straight out afterwards.
Yeah.
And they had a heck of a session.
Yeah, because whatever work they do, rain can wipe that out pretty much.
So is there an argument for going even softer on the compounds and just saying, well, just deal with it?
Yeah.
Well, learn to deal with it. Really. Why not?
There's some technical stuff that's gone on. I'm not suggesting I understand this. Mercedes have got revised double DRS system. In Belgium on Friday morning, they had experimented with the revised version of the double DRS. So this is the twin things that come down to create ground effect. Very similar in principle to the one currently being trailed, but not raced by Lotus. Only Rosberg had it on his car, though. No one else.
And we saw what happened to Rosberg.
Yeah, he didn't do so good, did he? Did he start way back? As well, he just finished badly.
He failed to get through Q1 and then had a five place grid penalty for a gearbox change.
Oh bugger!
So he started second from last.
I'm not saying he was put back down the grid, but he started at Silverstone. Vertical brake calipers as well were added to the Toro Rosso to try and support it. And Ferrari had a small side pod side barge, which improved airflow, allegedly. There you go. All big changes.
Did it actually improve Alonso's ability for him to fly his car then?
Yeah, I was just going to make a crack about that.
Yeah, that's what Grosjean skipped off when he just narrowly missed his head. We've had 4 weeks off, and it's been a long 4 weeks. I've got to say, it's felt like a long 4 weeks.
Yeah.
I mean, is it too long? I mean, I know as well that for two of those weeks, the servers are all shut down because the servers are all monitored by FOM, and everything is just switched off. They are not allowed to do a stroke for 2 weeks. They can't polish the cars even. I think 4 weeks is too long.
Yeah, it is too long when, you know, either side of it, you have two races with a week gap between. So I'd rather they come back earlier and have 2 weeks, you know, to the next race, even if it is sort of just down the road, really.
Yeah.
I mean, it did always used to be 3 weeks. There would be a race at the beginning of August and then a race at the end of August with a 3 week gap in the middle. So I don't know why they've extended it this season.
Yeah. But before it wasn't like an enforced, you know, stop developing or anything like that, really, until quite recently, was it?
Yeah, I think that's because of the length of the season. The FIA want to force the teams to actually make sure they have a break, and some of them not think, okay, well, we'll squirrel away in the background when we're supposed to be on holiday.
I do wonder if part of it this time was, you know, to sort of get out of the way of the Olympics and that. You know,
exactly, yeah.
That's true, actually. Good point. That might explain why it's an extra long break.
So it might be this year it's, you know,
yeah, good point.
Endless. And next year it's back to how we're used to it.
Yeah. Which would be good.
Although Bernie would never admit that, though.
No.
Sachs in the chat room agrees that it was too long as well, so we agree, definitely.
Well, I didn't mind.
No, because you got to do the Olympics.
Yeah, you had things to do.
Yeah. I got to drive around very slowly instead of watching driving around quickly. But never mind.
Mind you, Bernie is want to admit strange things these days.
Or at least come out with strange things and met and then not back them up or anything later.
No.
It's like a whoops, I shouldn't have said that moment, I think.
Yeah.
So
he's Bernie. He does what he wants.
Highlights of practice and qualifying? Any really? I mean, obviously, Rosberg not making past Q1 is a big one, and also Vettel not making it into the shootout is pretty big.
And Shuey as well.
Yeah, but Shuey had a good Grand Prix overall. I mean, he came back well, didn't he? He was third at one point.
How dominant Jensen was, you know, even at that point of the weekend, was, you know, great to watch as well.
Yeah, I mean, so what happened to the McLarens that they came back with such, you know, such a bang? What's happened to Jensen? He, I mean, he likes the car. He feels that he's in the setup of the vehicle. He's got it how he wants it. It responds to how he drives it.
Even though there was a point in qualifying, I think he was still saying there's no grip.
Right.
Yeah, but he said everything I saw, even pre the race, was even he was surprised with the speed he was getting out of that car. So it's obviously they've done something to it in the break.
Yeah.
Obviously not during the break. I wouldn't allege that McLaren were doing that, but
they've
obviously done something to the car that obviously works for Jensen, which is great.
They've had a differing setup for the drivers, they're saying. Button's gone with a new low downforce wing that was pushed in for Spa, while Hamilton, to sort out some handling problems that he's had in slow sectors, had gone for higher downforce. And the opinion seemed to be that low downforce was the better choice for Spa. It's got very long flowing corners, so...
And will be for Monza.
You think? I mean, the Marussia were tweeting out this morning that they thought that Monza is a very, very different Grand Prix. I mean, yeah, I know it's done in a park and it's roadways and stuff, but they're talking it's an extremely different Grand Prix from the other race circuits. It's
still entirely fast, different though.
From Belgium.
Well, they have different wings for Monza, don't they? They have a Monza wing and a Monaco wing, and then everything else is pretty much standard.
Yeah, it's like the extremes of sort of super slim and... Yeah. You know, they could, you know, because you like heavy downforces, you like.
I mean, this is the two magic weeks of the season for me. I love Spa. I love the way that it rises and falls, and the way that you go up that long slope
on 3-4 awesome.
And it goes around to the right. It just looks beautiful as well. And yeah. I love Monza as well. I like driving it on the F1 game. And I like watching it. It's like you say, it's a fast track. You know, you drive down that long straight to start off with. And of course, a couple of years ago, we had that fantastic crash, Guzapetrov, at turn one that took everyone out. So it's a nice first chicane to get yourself going.
Addressing the McLaren speed thing, it's encouraging. They must have made some improvements. We know that they had the new wing. Hamilton did take the new wing initially, and then if I remember correctly, he reverted to the old one because he thought that he wasn't making any progress. I think they may have been chasing a setup because in the end, the new wing turned out to be better. Jensen likes a balanced car, so even if it was understeering massively, as long as it's equal, then he can deal with it.
It might have been, you know, it's a great improvement, but more to Jensen's style this time.
And Jensen remarked when he watched the qualifying lap that the car, although it looked serene, it was like a swan. You know, he was working pretty hard, and he said he had some moments, but you just can't see it very well on.
He was making it look easy, wasn't he?
He's very fluid, he just seems to manage it well. I think he's got excellent throttle control as well.
That is Jensen's style, isn't it?
Yeah, they're fundamentally different. Hamilton wrings the time out of the car, but Jensen wants the car to come to him.
No, I didn't see quite. Sorry, Chris, finish off.
Well, and Jensen and his team have probably found a better way of keeping the tyres in temp as well.
Yes. Now, I didn't see qualifying at all. Was Jensen's lap, was it in the shootout, or was he just serenely supreme all the way through the qualifying round?
All the way through, because he actually said, I think he actually said in one of the post-qualifying interviews, you know, he was talking about that pole lap, but then he said he thought he had a better lap in Q2.
In Q3, he set two fastest laps.
Wow.
They sent him out again last because, I suppose they could, but he didn't need to.
And from what I heard, he actually set three laps in Q3 that were faster than anybody else. He was consistently within a tenth of a second each lap.
I mean, and that's interesting as well, though, is that if you've got a dominant lap like that and it's looking like no one's getting close to you, you can run the risk in the shootout of going out with the tyres that you want for the next day rather than the tyres that you think are going to give you pole. Mm. Which again, you know, you're the only person in that whole 10 who's got a choice of what tyre they want the following day.
I think that's exactly the way it panned out in the race. As we saw, Jensen at the front, and I know we'll get onto the race in a little bit, but in terms of tyres, he was one of the few drivers that actually only did a one stop because he didn't need to push those tyres.
Yeah.
And with his style, he's been known to push it slightly less anyway. He's been very kind on them in previous years, especially at Spa.
They also, Pirelli brought harder compounds to the track this year than they did last year. And Paul Hembree was interviewed on the flying lap, and he remarked that not a single tyre had a blister on it by the end of the race.
Yeah, no, they did look in good nick. And there was people talking one tyre one-stop strategies, which for, you know, 44 laps of what's a very hard car, I would have thought, on the tyres. Pirelli, are Pirelli making the tyres, the longevity's gone up? Are they changing the compounds, or are they saying they're exactly the same as they were at the start of the season and now the teams have got used to them?
They are developing. Because that was one part of the BBC coverage. They actually showed you, I think it was Al Jazeera driving the Pirelli test car around. You know, he was showing you the kind of things he does, you know, that he just needs to keep a consistent lap, and then they can, you know, work with the data from that to change the compounds.
Mm. Yeah.
On the tyres in the race, I thought there was a very, and again, we're touching on the race, but it's not specific to, I think this is specifically about tyres. There's a great bit of team radio from Hülkenberg when his mechanic actually said to him, others are one stopping this. We need to make this work, this two stop work for us. So they were obviously panicking at that point. That was about halfway through the race. So, you know, it was coming as a bit of a shock that the likes of Jensen were actually finding a way to make it work on a one-stop.
Yeah. Chat room saying Jensen started to understand the tyres more, according to what Brundle's saying on Sky. Paul says Jensen, was he ever even in a race? He was so dominant that you never really saw him apart from when he came into the pits, and then when he won, all the action was elsewhere with other people.
Yeah, that's right. Certainly TV coverage was...
And Jenks's best radio line was, "Give me pull power," from Kimmy. Which,
yeah,
I think I knew what he was saying there, because the dial on the wheel that I saw at Marussia in the bottom right hand corner, there's the rev limits, and that goes from 1 to 10, and then there's the mixture for the petrol that goes from 1 to 10, and the drivers are never allowed to have it on maximum rev, maximum mixture. Unless it's, they're convinced that it's a track they're really comfortable
Wasn't it Kurs? Because he was told to only use 90% of Kurs at one point.
Right, as well. But that
he wanted the boost on the straights to try and get some of the passes in.
Yeah, but that was, I mean, he was, there was a fault though, I thought. I kind of read that as a fault. There's something wrong with the Kurs. Don't go to full power on the Kurs, because effectively, I think what they were saying was, if you deplete the Kurs, it may not come back. That's the way I kind of translated it in my head.
Yeah, I think that bit of radio was the F1 equivalent of Star Trek. I need more power, Scotty.
I can't do it without sounding like Arnold Schwarzenegger. I need more power. I'll be back.
That'd be a better interview if Kimmy did that voice.
I'll be back. Right, race proper then. It was a fun race.
Especially the start.
Yeah. 2 seconds in, Maldonado, he's not having a good year, is he? He's getting a bad reputation for himself. He jumps the line, swearing blind that it's someone else's fault, not his. Yeah, we know what you're on. And then, as a result, people start going everywhere, and this happens.
Yeah, I was so busy cursing Maldonado from the start that I've missed the start of the incident, because it happened less than 100 yards from the start-finish line.
I mean, it cleaned out four cars, didn't it, total?
Yeah.
Yeah. Old Grosjean was gone. Alonso was very close to losing his nose. And I'm not talking about the one on the car.
Yeah. That is an awesome picture, isn't it?
It is a great picture from his onboard. I'm surprised he's still holding the steering wheel there as well. I mean, it must be very, very close to when it started to happen. So, again, he's lucky he didn't lose a thumb.
Did anyone else see the sequence of pictures from Kobayashi's on board of how he avoided breaking his suspension?
And
it's like he steered into the crash, then he steered away from it, then he steered back into it.
Yeah.
And he had the instinct to do it just right and drive away.
And still finished.
From what I heard about what Alonso said afterwards, he didn't see that. He didn't see Grosjean's car coming. Because I know, you know, if you were driving and the car would did that, on the road, it would certainly scare the hell out of me.
No, it is very close. I mean, they're calling now for cockpits, which I've got to say, you know, cockpit lids, and I really don't think that's a positive move at all. No.
Well, they did that after the Massa crash, though, as well, didn't they?
The one thing that everyone seems to forget is those U-shaped bits that they put on top of the frame of the round the driver's cockpit after the driver actually gets in, brings it up to about virtually the side of the car, virtually up to almost level with the top of the head anyway. So there's no real danger. That it's designed to give the driver extra protection. you know, I can't remember who it was. There's somebody was 70 actually
centimeter rule as well, isn't there? There has to be a 70 centimeter clear, or not 70 centimeters, mate. Well, it might be 50 millimeters. There's a 50 centimeter clearance between the line of the top point of the engine housing and the front of the cockpit. If they draw a straight line there, there has to be a clearance of 50 centimeters between the driver's head and that line. Yeah. Otherwise, they're not allowed to race. So if it flips over, they're cleared.
Mm. Yeah. But considering what I can't remember who it was saying about it, that someone was making the point after the race when they were discussing this and saying, considering about the fact that years and, you know, in even but going back to the 70s and 80s, they, you know, the side of the car was up to the driver's shoulders. You know, you could see them leaning over and stuff like this when they were going around the bend. Mm. You know, those kind of things. You can understand why someone would, you know, would in that situation would have virtually got their head knocked off. But, you know, and that clearly was dangerous. So, you know, I think there's perfectly adequate safety.
It's not your red, though, Sarah, to be fair.
No, I know. And I appreciate it would have been scary for Alonso. But I just think that there is sufficient protection that they've got there now because of
it
that.
It did look surprisingly relaxed after.
Yeah, I think that was because he genuinely didn't see, from what I've heard, he was quite shocked by what actually happened when that car came flying over. That was the first he was aware of it.
Do they have a potty system in the F1 cars? Is there a brown trousers sensor? No. That's a picture there of Alonso, just depicting what you're talking about there, Sarah. At the highest point, the back collar is up level with the top of his visor, so there is only just the very top of the skull pointing out. But
yeah.
I think the one thing as well, I mean, they're talking about evacuation has to be, you have to clear the cockpit in 5 seconds and reattach the steering wheel in another 5 seconds as the regulation, otherwise you're not allowed to race. And if you've got a canopy on, unless you're talking about an ejector canopy or some description like that, like a fighter pilot, that's just not going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, when you think about the Massa's accident and looking at that picture of Alonso, you can see what a freak accident it was. I mean, it was about the only place that spring could go where it would do any damage to the driver. Yeah. And it went.
And also, it was in the Massa crash, it was coming from the front rather than like the side, wasn't it?
Exactly, yeah, which is the only way that anything like that could happen. It was a complete freak accident, that.
Now, then, there was a whole pile of incidents that were occurring during the race. And constantly, what was coming out was the stewards are going to look into that after the race. There wasn't I don't recall that anyone was given a penalty during the race. It was
not even Grosjean.
Afterwards. No. Well, I mean, Grosjean clearly didn't give up enough room. There was some room for Lewis to move to the white line, I would have said, but he wasn't in the wrong.
He was already over as far as he could go, Lewis was.
A little bit more, maybe, but he wouldn't have avoided the contact. Yeah. I think Grosjean would have just kept going if he had.
Yeah.
But there was lots and lots of incidents, and they've got this new tack of now we're going to look at it afterwards. I mean,
I think a lot of that probably, because I noticed that during the race. And the only conclusion I could come to with that was that the stewards actually felt that they needed to get the driver's side before they actually decided to, you know, what penalty to actually impose.
Mm.
Yeah.
There's so many feeds to look at as well, because they have everything all the time. And I would have thought if they want to go and review 20 in-car cameras and then, you know, I mean, they've got cameras that we never see too, because don't forget, Red Bull put cameras underneath cars and all kinds of places, and teams put them all over the shop. And they'll have all the track side and everything. And to correlate it all together, perhaps make a computer render to show positions of cars. Because Sky can do that on the hoof.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's
as we've seen. And they probably have the same technology. So they probably wanted to analyze it properly. That was one thing I got frustrated of last season, where they made a decision. It seemed to go against the person who should actually have benefited from a decision. So
that may explain why they're being a bit more cautious.
Maybe. Yeah.
They made the right call.
I mean, I think, you know. Looking at the incident that happened with Grosjean, and I know they made the decision after the race in terms of what penalty he got, but I think if he had actually escaped that and been continued, it would have been serious enough that they would have just black flagged him.
Yeah. So the race then, what did we think of it? What was the highs? What were the lows? What were the magic moments? Sarah's going to say, Jensen winning. I know, but...
Stop it.
Was that a good impression?
But you're right, yes, it was.
I'm that close to it myself saying that.
Oh, blimey. you're happy because Lewis was out.
Nah.
So, I mean,
he
overall...
He wrong this time. He was never anywhere near the wrong.
Bloody hell,
not even
Toad.
On his Twitter antics after.
Just anyone listening, just remember where you were when Tony Blunt said it wasn't Lewis's fault. Good grief.
Yeah, I think you're right. That's one case. I think when it was genuinely, he was in the wrong place at the wrong time.
Poor lad, he went straight in and got a kiss off Nicole. Well,
it's the way Grosjean sort of came right across. It's like what? I can't work out why Grosjean was doing that.
No, he must have seen him. There was no way he
wasn't avoiding anything. He wasn't avoiding Kobayashi, who kind of stalled it.
Yeah, I mean, he can't claim blind spot because Hamilton's tyres were right next to his cockpit. Mm. So
exactly.
And they kind of interlink, don't they, the fronts and the rears? So
I mean, the only thing that the steward's decision after, they said, oh, they took that penalty that they did because it took title contenders out of the race. So does that mean he could have knocked into anybody else, like say cars further back down the grid, or Toro Rosso's, Williams, and it would have been just a 5-place penalty or something?
So what penalties were given out as a result of the Grosjean incident? Did anyone get anything?
Grosjean got banned from one Grand Prix, and
he's Maldonado been banned from one Grand Prix.
Yeah, he will not be racing at Monza.
Yeah, they've got D'Ambrosio instead, haven't they?
Oh, so they're still allowed to run two cars. It's just not him.
It's just not him. And Maldonado got a 10-place grid penalty, 5 for the jump start and 5 for causing an accident. Now, I don't know whether that was he was deemed to be partly responsible for the accident that Grosjean.
No, was that later on?
No, he collided with Timo Glock at the restart.
Yeah.
Ah, right. Okay, I must
feel sorry for Timo. He just can't. Although, get a break.
It wasn't an incident that really got any TV time, that one.
Yeah, right, okay.
The second one. The first one, the jump start, obviously everybody saw it.
Yeah, I mean, it was a good result for Marussia, because I think, I don't mean to be nasty, but 5 cars weren't in the race, so they were instantly going to be higher up. They did do very well anyway, 18th, 19th. But, I mean, when I was there, they were talking about the fact their goal is at 2014 in Sochi, they want to have a podium position. Now, if you were going to go for a podium position in mid to late 2014, in mid 2012, you'd like to be hitting top 15 on a regular basis, I would have thought, and pushing top 10 on the odd occasion. The fact that they are 22nd, 23rd, 24th, I don't know if that's good enough progress, is it?
Well, it's all going to change, though, isn't it? Because 2014, we get the 1.6 litre turbos.
Yeah, I think the lower budget will definitely benefit Marussia because they're existing on 60 million as a total budget at the moment.
HRT is just going to start buying Fiestas and soup them up, it's not going
to... I don't think so. I think they'll still be Cosworth.
No, because then they can change the shell and just race in Formula Renault.
I tell you what I hope really does happen with that situation. And one of the great things about lowering the bar, I love to see it when new teams come into F1. I know it's not quite like when we had the independent teams, a lot of them in the 60s and 70s, but it is always nice when you get a new team that comes into F1 because you feel like it turns it into more of a competition, especially if they start to do quite well.
Yeah, they need to start improving. I mean, you look at Force India and, they're starting to push a lot harder now.
They are, yeah.
And do well. Williams is coming back into it. And
don't forget Mercedes were Jaguar as well.
I mean, there's a definite need for KERS and DRS for Marussia, and they haven't got it. They're running without both.
Mm.
And that's where they're losing out. I mean, they're 4 seconds off on lap times. That's an ocean.
Yeah.
That really is a huge, huge gap. Good luck to them, though. We love them to bits. Yeah. Come on, Team Marussia.
They were getting some airtime towards the end of the race. Did you see that? Because their two drivers were racing each other.
They were, yes.
And they were racing hard but fair. It was fantastic to watch.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Even for low down, relatively low positions.
So then, magic moments. What have we got, Tone?
Probably the start, but I did like the way Vettel was kind of cutting through the field at points as well.
Yep. He did. He had a very good race. I mean, I think one of the things that's interesting is everyone said he's not a racer. If he can't lead from the front, he's no good at all. And he raced. He gamed. And there was a couple of... Yeah. There was one pass that he did on Schumacher where I thought he really did do a good job. They were coming up side to side into the corner and Vettel made a little gamut, like, I'm going back out. I'm going to cut you off. And it stalled Schumacher, and then he came back in. He really, you know, played a bit of cat and mouse with him. I thought it was quite impressive.
Bit of a contrast to the moment in the, you know, going into the pit lane, wasn't it?
Sachs in the chat room saying, they'll be talking to the teams and saying, yeah, we upgraded the XR2 for this race and put a subwoofer in the boot. Sarah, what was your magic moment, mate?
I've got three of them.
Oh, blimey, here we go.
I do them in the order that I wrote them down. The first one was Vettel's overtaking of Webber on lap 9, which was that intelligent 2-bend where he positioned himself for the second bend before the first bend, knowing that he would nail him on the second bend. And I just thought that was really intelligent driving. Yep. The second one, of course, was Jensen's pit stop, which equaled the fastest ever pit stop.
Was it 2.6
seconds.
Six, right.
And the third one, which I absolutely loved, because I love Eau Rouge, was Raikkonen taking Schumacher on lap 34 at Eau Rouge.
Yeah.
He just completely nailed him. It was fantastic, an incredibly brave thing to do on 180 mile an hour bend.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
He's a ballsy racer. He's
he is,
he's got,
absolutely.
I think he's got virtually nothing between his ears in terms of fear, so complete adrenaline junkie. But
funny enough, when you talk about that, one of the things I remember Raikkonen for in terms of ballsy driver is actually happened at Monza years ago, when somebody had an accident and there was complete smoke across the track, and he just drove through it as if it was completely clean air and he could see what was on the other side of it.
Yeah, he kept it full pelt, didn't he?
I know.
Very good. Chris, what was yours?
Okay, I suppose I have three.
Okay.
First is Button doing his victory wiggles after crossing the line first. Everyone likes a victory wiggle. Although I was hoping for a donut. Never mind. The second is seeing Massa do all right. Now, I know he kind of lucked into it to an extent, but it's nice to see him at the top half of the grid.
Back, good.
And the third was Bruno Senna getting fastest lap of the race with a 1:52.822 on lap 43.
Indeed.
I always like it when a Senna gets the fastest lap. Something right about that.
It is.
And right near the end as well.
And a Williams. It's always nice to see Williams cars going fast.
It's the kind of thing Vettel was doing last year. It's like when he was winning, he was just putting in the fastest lap right near the end, wasn't he?
And it's interesting if you watch the drivers as they try to do fastest laps, because they're all low fuel. They're all, you know, they're all gunning for it, and they all get a bonus if they get fastest laps. So he's got a little bit of money from that.
Yeah, it's like Vettel always used to like to have the complete set, pole, race win, and fastest lap, didn't he? Last year, particularly last year.
It's good fun.
The chat room is joining in. They're saying that Sachs says his three golden moments were Jensen getting in the car, Jensen winning, and Jensen getting out of the car.
I can relate to that.
And, to be fair, he's missing Jensen on the podium there, where he, you know, because it was his first, you know, time winning and on that podium setup where they interviewed him. He's going, this is a bit different.
I like the way he said, "Hello, everyone."
Yeah.
That was great.
I have an extra magic moment. And I'm going to borrow Paul's. Paulum says, just great to see it on the BBC and not on a dodgy postage stamp size feed on some foreign website. I totally agree.
Okay. Yes.
But my fourth magic moment is the really awkward looks that always get exchanged when the Sky and BBC crews meet in the paddock.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, it's like an ex-couple.
Yeah, I actually
it's
think
delicious.
Chris, on that, I think I actually remember a moment. I can't remember when it was, when DC was actually, or they were walking around, and you could see Martin Brundle back in the background. And I was pretty certain it was him. And they said, I can't remember which country, they said, oh, that's so and whatever country it was that they came up with coverage. And I thought, no, that's Martin Brundle. I thought they just didn't want to say it, did they?
The thing that gets me is when I saw the ones where they passed and Brundle has clearly been bought out by F1 and on the F1 channel on Sky and probably getting a handsome fee for it. DC's locked in for another year on his contract with the BBC. Otherwise, I think he'd have been gone as well. And when they passed in the pit, it was like Brundle was like, "Hi Dave, how you doing?" Or "Hi DC, how you doing?" You know, having a great time over here. And the look on DC's face was like, if I had a knife, I'd stab you. You'd know nothing about it. It'd be over instantly. And it was just like, you weak bastard, come back here.
Well, there was that the post-race forum where BBC had highlights, but they ran a forum. I think it was Canada, possibly.
Yeah.
And you know, they dragged Brundle onto it in the paddock during the forum. Mm. Had a little sort of awkward 5 minutes of how are you? Yeah.
It's almost like he's persona non grata on BBC now, isn't it?
Yeah,
Jinx. It's like even he was, even DC was going, we better not have you on much more or you'll be breaking a contract, you know.
Jinx in the chat room says that Nordic courage is what Raikkonen's got. He says five praise Odins before every race. Mm. And he says actually raise before every raise. So I don't know if that I'm getting that wrong. Yeah,
it just needs a bit of charisma to go with it, doesn't he?
It's like when mum and dad fight, says Jinx. My magic moment was the first pass of Kimi Raikkonen on Schumacher when he completely got it wrong because there was DRS straight after the pass. And, of course, Schumacher got the DRS back on him and immediately took him back and Raikkonen got no curves because he'd used it up for the pass. And I thought that was a bit of, oh, Kimi, come on, that's schoolboy. It really was.
Oh, they have a good ding-dong they do, don't they?
They did. They had a great race. Well done. Well, well done. This podcast and all the others is brought to you by UK2.net. They carry all our bandwidth. They look after us amazingly. If you've got a fan site that you want to put, say you want to start f1fanpage.com, you can go to UK2 and see if it's available. Go to our website, britishtechnetwork.com, click on UK2's logo and it takes you to their site and leaves a tab open with ours on. Go back to ours and click on sponsors, and sponsors will give you all of the codes that you can put in to reduce your basket when you've bought all the stuff you need. You can literally, I'm not kidding you, in 10 minutes from where you starting your purchase, you'll get 20% off your domain name, you'll get no DNS management charges, you'll get your first month's hosting free of charge, I think, or £50 off, and you get a site builder application for £2.95 a month, and that's it. You put your payment details in, your website's sent to you, you're all up ready to go, and within 10 minutes you can have a site up and running. The site builder application is just fantastic. It's like drag and drop. It's like nothing harder than making a PowerPoint slide, and everything just works. It's just there right for you. It's easy to use, and it's up and running. So whatever your heart's desire is, go and get that domain name from UK2 and start using your passion. Start your F1 fan page and get them to host it for you, and make sure that they know that we sent you. So make sure you use the click through from our website to buy the stuff. Make sure you use the codes that we give you. Don't do yourself out of the discounts. And when you want to sign into your account, just go back to our page and sign through on the UK2 logo again. Thanks very much for their support. And thanks very much for you guys as well, because you've been buying lots of UK2 services, which is why they're going to stick around for another 2 years with us. That'll take us right up to 5 years. We love them to bits.
Huzzah!
Well done.
They get extra nerd points too, because when I registered a domain with them literally the other day,
right,
when you do it on the registration page, it gives you a status bar as it does it.
Yep.
And if you're a bit of a geek, you can click more information and it shows you all the steps. So no longer is it just like a magic click and it's done. You can actually see what it does.
I missed that. I know what you mean about the status bar, but I hadn't actually spotted that.
You'll have to give
And they send you an email when it's done, because my .net took slightly longer than a .co.uk, and it sends you an email when it's set up.
Very good.
It's very clever.
They're a good bunch. We love them to bits.
Hmm.
Next week, we've got the Grand Prix from Monza. As we said, it's in the Great Park, and it's a lovely, lovely circuit. It's going to be a slick and fast race. Predictions for winning. Is it going to be a Ferrari home win, do you think? Tony, who you got your money on? Hello, Tony. You there? Who have you got money on for next week?
I think it's going to be a good one for Alonso.
Yeah, Ferrari home win.
Yeah.
Be nice. Jensen said he's ready for the booing. Sarah, where's your money on? Don't be sentimental and just say
no,
Jensen.
No, I know. I'm not going to be sentimental. I think it's going to be interesting to see whether the pace that McLaren have got was a one-off for Jensen, or whether it's actually going to be genuinely much faster. Because obviously the teams won't have had much chance to actually have done any changes over the last few days. So if that car is genuinely fast, then you've got to put your money on Button or Hamilton to win, haven't you?
You'd have thought so. Absolutely. And Chris?
Ferrari will turn the wick up, but they always seem to struggle towards the tail end of a race on previous form from this season. In the Pirelli thing which you can all join in with. You can predict your results when it works. And I think I chose Button, Alonso, and Raikkonen.
So you wouldn't you just love Raikkonen to win
a race? He so deserves it this year.
Well, no, he doesn't.
He's consistent. He gets the points in.
That's all they want. Constructors' Championship.
He's that eighth driver who hasn't won the race yet this year.
Can we also have a mention of Maria de Viotto as well?
Yes, what's happened?
Nothing major, just an update. At the end of August, she's been released from hospital now. She's got to have some more plastic surgery done, but she is getting better slowly.
Good. It's good to hear.
That is good.
They're still saying driver error, though, aren't they? They're not saying it's any faults with the car or anything.
That's a shame.
It is.
Everyone makes mistakes.
Yeah. Costly.
Yeah.
Right. We'll be back in next week. Not sure when we're going to do the live podcast. It's been all over the place. I do apologise for you if you turned up in the chat room. It's just we really struggle with some on BBC, some on Sky, and then me going away for the rest of the week when to get it done. So we'll try and get it done on Sunday night. If not, we'll try and do it one night from the hotel. And if not, then we'll try and do it on Thursday night immediately after Big Show. But I've got to say, I'm knackered. Where can we get a hold of your Tone?
At Tone_720 on Twitter.
Nice to have you on, sir. See you again soon. Sarah, where are you, mate?
I'm at the Sarah Jane UK on Twitter.
Excellent. And Chris?
Me three on the Twitters, at Christopher Wah, and the Wah is for winning.
Winning. Well done, winning. Mate. Good to have you back. We missed you.
Yes, we did.
Nice to be back. Yeah. Feels like a comfortable pair of socks.
Yeah.
That's good.
Comfy but smelly.
Well, you know.
In the right places.
I'm sure you had aircon in that.
Oh, talking of aircon, yes. I've got aircon coming in here. It needs to be fitted this week, so I'm boiling hot at the minute. See you next week.
Sweet boxing then.
Thanks for listening.